Hello there. Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Gondelton here, your sometimes humble host, for this almost hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you and yours are well. Everybody's healthy and you're safe. And that you had a good Monday. It's the Tuesday, October 27th edition of the podcast. And as usual, in the moments before the Facebook Live, I stumble across, or stumble across, stories pop up, I should say. And one of the just popped up that I just saw is coming from the Daily Caller, and the title is The Economist's Forecast. That's the publication, The Economist. The Economist's forecast says Biden has 94% chance of winning. Democrats likely to flip the Senate. And I got curious. And I thought it was very interesting what I found. I've just been, for the last, oh, I guess 5 minutes or so, been digging and searching and trying to find their predictions for 2016. You know what you can't find on the interwebs right now is the Economist's forecast for 2016. I think that's pretty interesting. Now, they're very bold in saying that Sleepy Joe has a 94% chance of winning this election, but they're pretty shy about letting people see what they had to say about the election in 2016. Now, I suppose that if you are a subscriber and you can get behind their paywall, you might be able to find something, but on the public easy access record, not so much. Huh. That's interesting to me. And it should be interesting to you as well, because we're being bombarded with polls, with statistics, with data right now, which is based on questions asked by people seeking a specific outcome for their polling, because they've been paid by certain institutions to go out there and find out what the people think about A, B, and C. And they want specific answers, and they will find those specific answers. So, just like in 2016, when on election night, all of the pundits were grinning and chuckling about this idiot Donald Trump and his idiotic try to become president of the United States, and the fact that Hillary Clinton was the 85% lock-in winner of this election going in, just like then, I think we're going to see now, they're going to be the same idiots saying the same things, that presidential-looking Joe Biden has this locked, ignoring the fact that we're watching video and pictures, we're watching reporting on social media and on conservative news media of thousands upon thousands of people showing up in all kinds of weather to see Donald Trump at his rallies. And they're not all Republicans, not by a long shot. Almost 80% are, but not quite 80%, according to the last statistics I saw. It's like 20% Democrats, and then there's a few percentage points that are independents. Those people are showing up. Democrats are showing up at the Biden, not at the Biden rallies, but at the Trump rallies. Democrats are coming to see the president. And those Democrats will go to the polls in just a few days. And I believe the vast majority of them that are at these rallies, they're going to vote for Donald Trump. And I think a lot of Democrats are going to vote for Donald Trump, because I think a lot of Democrats actually are good, honest people. They're good, honest people who are sick and tired of the manipulation and the power lust they see coming from the party leadership in Washington, D.C. right now. I think they're just folks. They're your neighbors. They're your coworkers. There's some folks you go to church with. They just want a good life for themselves and their families. They want things to be fair. And they're watching what's happening. And they're watching people like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. They're watching them demand things. Pelosi, for example, who is holding America hostage right now to damage Donald Trump. She is demanding that you and I surrender our tax dollars to pay for all manner of things which have absolutely nothing to do with the current pandemic. She won't budge. Now, she has just in the last 24 hours said, okay, we'll get back to the table and talk some more. But up until then, she's been holding people hostage because she wants to bail out these blue cities and states which have made bad decisions as far as the coronavirus goes and as protests go. She wants to help cover their damages. She's not looking out for you. She's looking out for her power base. That's who she's looking out for. While other people, more honest people in Washington, D.C., are just trying to get you a check to help you pay for your groceries since you can't work. Well, that's the truth of the matter. Democrats are seeing this happening, and I think a lot of Democrats are going to cast that vote for Donald Trump. And I think since the debates, especially this most recent one, I think a lot of people are regretting their early voting decisions. In fact, search engine reports are telling us that quite a few people are asking the question, can I change my early vote? Well, here's the good news. You can. Just check in your state to see what the process is. But in most states, I believe you can. It can be, and it is as simple in some states, as just showing up to vote in person. And your in-person vote will cancel out your mail-in vote. But check in your state. Please, don't just take my word for it. I'm going off what I've seen, bits and snippets and pieces and things, and various and sundry reports. Go to your state's election websites and find out the rules. Get answers to questions. And if you really feel like you made a mistake, you can change your vote. And if you know people who are kind of on the fence now because they saw Joe Biden's lackluster performance and they've been watching the news, paying closer attention now than they were before. You see, a lot of people have not been paying attention. They haven't been doing their due diligence. They haven't been doing their homework. They're just voting against Donald Trump because everything on their social media says he's evil. And then now as we're getting closer to the election, they're starting to actually pay attention and do a little work and reading a few things, and they're realizing, oh my goodness, Joe Biden might end up costing this country its sovereignty. Joe Biden is a liability. Joe Biden apparently has already sold his soul to other nations. So they're having second thoughts about their vote. And they're seeking answers. Can I change that mail-in vote? It's happening right now. But the economists' forecast saying that Biden has a 94% chance of winning is very fishy. Just as fishy as all of the claims made in 2016 going up to election night. That's just something to remember. And that's what caught my attention in the moments just before, you know, as the pre-show music was playing and I was getting ready to get started here and open the mic and start yammering. That's what got my attention. Other things that have gotten my attention and probably gotten yours as well, you've no doubt seen the story about this woman who spent time in her father's dying days to convince him to change his vote, to change his allegiance, and vote for Joe Biden instead of Donald Trump. This was the most important thing on this woman's mind. Sunday, social media erupted over a TikTok video that got posted over to Twitter, showing a woman holding up note cards that explained how she got her terminally ill father, a supporter of Donald Trump, to vote for Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. It says, her cards say, "My 55-year-old conservative dad has never voted Democrat in his life. He's dying of aplastic anemia. We've had some intense exchanges about him voting for Trump this year, which has been painful since we'll almost certainly lose him in the next few weeks to months. He has 6 daughters who love him dearly. Yesterday, he was so excited to tell me he just voted for Biden-Harris 2020 because it matters to my girls, and my girls matter to me. Vote for the guy who respects women. If my very Republican dad can, so can you." Her insistence that Biden is the candidate who respects women comes after he has been repeatedly accused of inappropriately touching women and has been accused of sexual assault. Her tweet garnered widespread backlash online, many notable accounts and public figures noting the lack of awareness by the woman to the fact that there are more important things in life than politics. The folks over at the Reagan Battalion tweeted, "sad and sick," and would say the same if she were a Trump supporter badgering her dad on his deathbed about his plans to vote for Biden. Sick people. Kelly Jane Torrance tweeted, "I wasn't lucky enough to be able to have conversations with my father when he was dying. He went into a coma quickly, from which he never recovered. But if I'd had the opportunity, hectoring him about politics would never even have occurred to me. I'm sorry for all involved here." Peter Whittle tweeted, "There are so many layers of awfulness in this." David Haransi tweeted, "There are better religions." Ooh. Beckett Adams tweeted, "Berating one's dying father for his politics is not something I'd brag about openly. But then again, I'm not a complete psychopath." Whew. John Gabriel tweeted, "Can't imagine wasting my dad's dying days hectoring him with intense exchanges about his political views. What a depressing video." Ann Coulter tweeted, "I hope he lied to them." Nick Searcy tweeted, "Democrats are actually sick. It's disgusting and sad." Harmeet Dillon tweeted, "Try this with an Indian parent, dying or not. They will shame the hell out of you. Toot sweet." Wow. Imagine being so deeply deluded that you would spend some of your father's dying days talking about politics instead of talking about your memories. Talking about how to vote instead of what his wishes are. What his wishes are. At that time, if your parent is still mentally capable, they would much prefer talking about you and your life. What's happening with you and your brothers and sisters and your kids, if you have them. They'd rather talk about family, about their relationships, about the good times they've all had. And if you're sick enough to talk to them about voting, you really need some help. You need some deep, deep help. But then, that's progressivism. It's the Daily Perspective for Tuesday, the 27th day of October, 2020. Oh, my goodness gracious. Yesterday, I was out and about. I had a Dawson Now session. Interesting interview. It'll pop up a week from today. And then I'm back in on Thursday for another interesting session. I'll tell you more about that probably Friday. Oh, my. But that was pretty much it for the day. I stayed busy working on a little side project as well. And I have a tech project I'm working on that it's just, you know, I've had, I'm not going to get into Nerdville with you today. I'm just not, because I know some of you roll your eyes and go, oh, come on, can you just get on with it? I'll just say that sometimes you have something on a shelf and you know it works and you take it off the shelf and you plug it in and you hook it up and it doesn't, I have something that the remote control, the last time I used everything in this little system, it worked and now it doesn't. And it's just sat, it's just sat someplace. It's not like it's been, it hasn't even been gathering dust. It's been inside of a drawer. And, you know, and I pulled it all out and hooked it up and thought, this is going to be great. I can just fire up the iPad and screencast to this and everything will work and it'll look fantastic and it'll do exactly what we need it to. It's not working. And that's kind of how yesterday went. And I worked on it until I heard the garage door go up and my wife got home. The dog's going insane. Kimber the Wonder Dog is barking her little brains out because Jane is home. And I realized, oh man, I've been down here for a while. I've been in the studio for a while working on this situation. And so it is now sitting maybe 5 feet to my left over here waiting for me to get back into it again. And what I finally decided to do was just ditch this thing and maybe work on it at a later time, because it's something I do want to work, because it's something I want to be able to use at some time in the future, but I don't need right now. So what I ended up doing was just, I think the remote control's dead, but for $10 more than a remote control, I could buy a little gizmo that does exactly the same thing and only the one thing I want this to do instead of everything the other thing does. Anyway, so much for that. Sorry for the rambling. The vote to confirm Judge Amy Coney Barrett happened late yesterday, and many of us watched her being sworn in last night, and I thought it was an interesting image on screen, given what the progressives would have us embrace, and that is a very successful black man swearing in a successful black woman. And progressives going insane about it. That's an interesting picture. All of these people who profess their love, their devotion, their commitment to minorities and to women, pitching a screaming hissy fit that a minority is swearing in a woman to the Supreme Court because they aren't the right kind of minority and woman. Just remember that happened. Go back and look at the video of Clarence Thomas swearing in Amy Coney Barrett as the next justice on the United States Supreme Court. And remember that this black man swearing in this white woman was demonized during the process. And one of the people who did the most demonizing was Joe Biden. Senator Joe Biden. Things that make you go, Well, during the vote to confirm Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court Monday evening, Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono, the nut job from Hawaii, cast her vote not just as no. You knew she was going to vote no, right? You knew Mazie Hirono. disconnected from reality as she is, as distantly as the Hawaiian Islands are disconnected from mainland United States of America, you knew she was going to vote no. When it comes, I have the video clip, actually, but the thing is, it's so far in the background. It's so you can hear what she says, but it's the audio quality is just not good. When it comes time and they're calling the roll and all of these people are saying aye or no, she stands up and says, "I'd like to say hell no." I'm quoting Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii. She says, "I'd like to say hell no," and then sits down. Barrett was confirmed on a 52-48 vote, with only Republicans voting to confirm her. The Democrats, like children picking up their toys and walking away, sulking, refused to participate in the vote. One Republican, Susan Collins, voted against Barrett. That comes as she's in the middle of a tough re-election campaign, and her no vote ultimately would not alter the outcome anyway. Something you may not be aware of is that in Washington, D.C., both parties do this. The Democrats are notorious for doing this, but both parties do it from time to time. And that is, they have caucus meetings, they make their decisions, they say, okay, we can afford for you to vote against this because we know you're up for re-election, and if you vote for this, you'll lose your seat. That happens. It happens on a regular basis. So people will step forward and they will vote against something that you want them to vote for because they know that in their state, that if they vote along with you, they're going to lose their election. It happens all the time. Most often on the Democrat side. It's all about maintaining that seat and the numbers and power. During the hearings for Barrett that preceded the vote yesterday, Democrat Senator Mazie Hirono from Hawaii raised eyebrows by asking this mother of seven if she had ever engaged in the sexual assault or harassment of anyone. Though the judge has never been accused of such misconduct. Hirono asked Barrett, "Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any physical or verbal harassment or assault of a sexual nature?" Barrett answered, "No, Senator Hirono." Hirono pressed forward, "Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?" And again, Barrett said no. Hirono said she asks those two questions of all nominees who come before committees on which she sits. Now, Barrett's also been under attack over her Catholic faith by the left since her confirmation hearing to be a federal judge, an appeals judge in 2017. Both Senators Dianne Feinstein and Dirk Durbin were hit with charges of anti-Catholic bigotry for pressing Barrett about her personal religious views, most notably when Feinstein told the judge, quote, "The dogma lives loudly within you," end quote. Following Barrett's federal appeals judge hearing, Senator Ben Sasse, the Republican of Nebraska, raised concerns over attacks from Democrats on the judge's faith, saying, "I think some of the questioning that you may have been subjected to today seems to miss some of these fundamental constitutional protections we all have." In other words, they're not supposed to ask you about that. You have a constitutional protection of your religion. They're not supposed to ask. It's not supposed to be an issue. But when progressives want to demonize someone, they will ask them, "Hey, have you stopped beating your wife?" questions regarding their religion, which is what Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin did. They transgressed constitutional law and made her faith an issue. My wife Jane and I were talking about this last night because a friend of hers on Facebook was ranting about how this this person appointed by Donald Trump, she believes that she's in a cult that believes they're all handmaids of God. And no doubt you've seen this. I mean, you've seen these psychologically disturbed people out in the street wearing these red robes and white hoods because of a work of fiction, The Handmaid's Tale. And they're trying to associate this justice with a work of fiction. And what they refuse to see, because they've got their blinders on and they like them the way they got them, is that the reference that she once made, or was once made associated with her with being a handmaid, was just essentially a poetic statement. It was not a doctrinal statement. It was something poetic. She doesn't believe she's a handmaid. But that doesn't matter to them.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Yep. And we're seeing a lot of madness today. A lot of madness. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, diving into the second half of this Tuesday edition. Let's see here. Pardon me. I got a bit distracted. I get these little pop-up notices, just like you do. And I wanted to see what it was, because quite often those little pop-up notices mean, oh, there's another story about what? And I kind of like to check on what that is. And this was nothing. Let's see here. By the way, just sort of an inside baseball note, if you're a fan of Chicks of the Right, the two ladies in Indianapolis, Indiana, who have an early midday show, 2 hours every day, they do a live show, and they do a live stream on Facebook every morning at about 7:30 Central, and they're just two very happy women who are conservatives, and they laugh at the absurdities of life, and I think that's one of the reasons I like them. And my wife likes them. And they have what do they call it? They call it the Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast. That's their podcast. And it comes out once a week, and they pick a topic, and they talk about a single topic once a week. And generally speaking, it is their signature brand of laughing at the insanity of life and then getting serious about it, because it's important to be serious and understand why they're laughing at the absurdity. So they made an announcement. They made an announcement on their Friday radio show, which I don't get a chance to listen to the radio show. I'm usually busy while they're doing that. And this morning they announced it on their little live Facebook feed that Daisy is leaving the show. So it's just going to be Mock. Macarena is going to be there by herself. And Daisy is taking a corporate job, which will make it easier for her to transfer to Texas, because she and her husband, they're planning on moving to Texas. But they're going to keep doing the podcast. They're going to keep up there. They have this website that's been around for a while. In fact, these two ladies were the first. They were the first Facebook page to be shut down for political reasons, because they're conservatives. They have that signature honor, that singular honor of being the very first ones that Facebook ever locked up for expressing their conservative opinions on Facebook. Go back and check the records. Actually, they were on the news, national news, for being locked down. So that's how they came to widespread recognition. And they do that little live thing every morning, and I watch it. Most mornings I watch it, and some days I wait until Jane gets home, because I get involved in other things, and then we'll watch it together or listen to it together, and we enjoy their laughter and their take on things, because it's pretty much how we see things. But that's just sort of an inside baseball thing. So I know they don't listen, but a tip of the hat to both of you. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it, and you help keep the fires burning. You keep fanning the flames. Keep it up. Well, we were talking about Supreme Court insanity, and now Joe Biden Speaking of insanity, Joe Biden has made a statement about court packing, because we've been talking about this for a while, that the Democrats have been very vocal and they've been upfront about this. They want to increase the number of justices on the Supreme Court so that they can have a majority. That's really all it amounts to. They want to have a leftist progressive majority on the Supreme Court. It's all about power. It's just all about power. So the feedback to that has been negative, overwhelmingly negative, because people, even people who haven't really thought about it, start thinking about it. And they think, wait a minute, isn't that like losing the game, so you stop everything in the middle and then change the rules? In fact, it is everything like that. It's exactly what that is. So if court packing sounds too extreme, then maybe court rotation will do the trick. Now that Judge Amy Coney Barrett has been confirmed to the Supreme Court, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has said he will consider rotating justices if he gets elected next week. Now, this should stun you, and if you've been thinking about voting for Biden, it should shock you. Speaking at a campaign stop in Chester, Pennsylvania, Biden said he will consider shifting the Supreme Court justices to lower courts during his tenure. Quote, "There is some literature among constitutional scholars about the possibility of going from one court to another court, not just always staying the whole time in the Supreme Court, but I've made no judgment." There are just a group of serious constitutional scholars have a number of ideas how we should proceed from this point on. That's what we're going to be doing. We're going to give them 180 days, God willing, if I'm elected, from the time I'm sworn in, to be able to make such a recommendation. So what Biden is saying, by the way, I need to say this, constitutional scholars, he uses that term, and politicians use that term, constitutional scholars. Oh, well, that's good. People who know the stuff. Remember, there are scholars who are bat crap crazy. Okay? Just look at every university. There are constitutional scholars who don't appreciate the Constitution for what it is. They dislike it for what it is. They disagree with it and its positions, and they want to see it changed. And that is the group of, quote, serious constitutional scholars, end quote, who have a number of ideas how we should proceed from this point on. And that is who Joe Biden is talking about. He's talking about people who agree with Barack Hussein Obama that the Constitution is a restrictive document and it prevents government from doing all the wondrous things it could do for people. And they miss the point that that is the point of the Constitution. And that is why it says several times, Congress shall not. Because the framers of the Constitution knew the nature of politicians, and they knew they had to rein them in and prevent them from doing what politicians do when they learn what they can get away with. Now, the concept of judge rotation has been floated in the past. Bernie Sanders, for example, he made such a proposal during the Democrat primary. He said, "I do not believe in packing the court. We've got a terrible 5-4 majority conservative court right now. But I do believe constitutionally we have the power to rotate judges to other courts, and that brings in new blood into the Supreme Court and a majority, I hope, that will understand that a woman has a right to control her own body and that the court and corporations cannot run the United States of America." 5-4 majority. He's, of course, including Roberts in that, he's not in the five, trust me. And, of course, Bernie being the delusional progressive that he is, the socialist, okay, he's a communist, believes that corporations are running the United States of America and he believes that abortion is about a woman's body. It's not about the woman's body. It's about the body inside the woman's body. A Rasmussen poll, however, indicated that Americans would rather see term limits on the Supreme Court before they see court packing. Earlier this year, an academic study from political scientist Aaron Belkin of San Francisco State University and James Druckmann of Northwestern University's Institute for Policy Research openly encouraged Democrats to pack the Supreme Court, asserting the party would face little political fallout, if any. The study was funded by the progressive group Take Back the Court, which has openly championed court packing as a solution to a conservative judiciary. In the study, participants were asked to choose between two hypotheticals, a status quo scenario and a scenario in which a Democratic Party candidate proposes court packing to bring greater balance to the court, while a Republican Party candidate laments how it would be a threat to the independence of the judiciary and the rights of all Americans by radical liberals trying to change the rules so a few cities in New York and California can impose their will on the rest of us. According to their study, that scenario, scenario two, had almost no impact on people's choices. Now, what Joe Biden is talking about is unconstitutional, which means it's illegal. And when they start polling the people about what they think, generally speaking, not specifically, but generally speaking, they're talking to people who really don't understand the Constitution, who've probably never read more than just the first few, you know, the first few words of it, or the last time they did was for a class assignment when they were kids. And they don't understand the purposes for the contents of the Constitution. They don't understand the reasoning behind it. And they realize that that ignorance plays to their benefit. Most people don't understand why the framers of the Constitution put it together the way it did. They don't understand the process that went on. They don't understand the back and forth, the discussions, the disagreements, the arguments. They don't understand what actually happened. These people believe the Federalist Papers is a website or a radical conservative group, when in actuality, it's the collective writings of the people who made the decisions about what was going to be in our nation's founding document. They know that if they put the question to the people, the ignorance of the people will play to their advantage. Also, they know that depending on how the questions are framed, they can touch on the emotions of those being polled, and their emotions will be in play with their answers. And in America, the United States of America, our national policy is not decided by the emotions of the people. That's why we have laws, founding documents. They are the guardrails that keep us from getting emotional and rolling over into the ditch. But progressives want that emotion. They want that passion. They want that ignorance, because it plays to their advantage, as I've said. Once again, they can't win the game playing within the guardrails. They can't win the game playing by the rules, the law. So they want to change the law, the rules, to move the guardrail so they can win. Welcome back. Let's jump into this final segment of this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I've been editing show notes. As usual, I've got way more stuff than I have time to talk about. But I want to wrap up with something I've had in the stack for a couple of days. And I think it's important because we've all seen this guy, Paul Krugman. He's a talking head that the progressive news networks love to call on. But you see him on the Sunday morning shows. You see him called on for opinion about certain things. If you watch CNN, bless your heart if you do. Or if you watch MSNBC for anything other than entertainment value, then you've seen Paul Krugman. Well, there was a recent op-ed by Paul Krugman, and he had to change the title of it because, frankly, it was just blatantly unfair. But even with the change, the article is just this huge straw man argument. And this is coming, by the way, from a guy who does a thing on Twitter and Facebook. He's called the Meme Policeman. Now, if you don't follow the Meme Policeman, you need to, because what he does is he torpedoes leftist memes, because you see them all the time. You know, you see them, you're scanning through social media and you see this thing that just kind of ruffles your feathers, and it's based on something that's completely and totally fact-free, imaginary, delusional. And you look at it and you think, well, how can any idiot believe that? And you're tempted to waste your time by arguing with people who are commenting below it. You know, so, by the way, this is an aside. Don't waste your time, please. Don't waste your time arguing with people on social media. I mean, face it. I'm just going to go ahead and get blunt here. God gave you a certain amount of time to live. Don't waste it. Just don't. Don't argue with people. You have your views. They have their views. They are not going to change their mind because of your brilliance. It's just not going to happen. Don't argue with people on social media. Remember the old saying, when you wrestle with a pig, you both get filthy and one of you enjoys it. Don't argue with people on social media. If you want to make your views known, set up a page, not just but set up a separate page on Facebook or whatever, and just type your thoughts out from time to time and publish them on the page. You'll feel better about things, and if people want to argue with you, you can block them. The same goes for Twitter. Okay? Now, back to Paul Krugman. Remember this. Paul Krugman is a Nobel economist. Nobel economist. And intellectual. He writes for the most prestigious paper in the United States of America, but he can't take the time to do basic research and understand philosophic positions. If an honest intellectual were to attack another, they would take the time to understand their positions and use their own statements as ammunition. In this context, that would mean seeing what Ayn Rand herself thought about pandemics. And it just so happens, she addressed it in a 1963 Q&A, which, by the way, is linked below this in a video. Get the show notes today at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. She explains in her own words, quote, if someone has a contagious disease against which there is no inoculation, then the government will have the right to require quarantine. What is the principle here? It's to protect those people who are not ill, to protect the people who, to prevent the people who are ill from passing on their illness to others. Here you are dealing with a demonstrable physical damage. Remember that in all issues of protecting someone from physical damage, before a government can properly act, there has to be a scientific objective demonstration of an actual physical danger. If it is so demonstrated, then the government can act to protect those who are not yet ill from contacting the disease. In other words, to quarantine the people who are ill is not an interference with their rights. It is merely preventing them from doing physical damage to others. Now, if you're not familiar with Ayn Rand, she wrote Atlas Shrugged. If you haven't read Atlas Shrugged, two things. One, I would encourage you to read it. And two, don't give up. It's long. It's tedious. It was written back in the 30s. Terminology is different. Understanding of things is different. But it's worth reading because the principles illustrated in the book apply today. In fact, it's frightening how accurately they apply today. You should read it. Now, clearly, Ayn Rand did not think there was a freedom to infect people. It's a dishonest caricature of her position. To be fair, this was a somewhat obscure Q&A, so perhaps it could escape Paul Krugman's rigorous research, but a simple Google search would bring up the Ayn Rand Institute's view on the matter, which they wrote a detailed explanation of just this June. Their position is complex and nuanced, but it's also the opposite of the freedom to infect straw man. They take Rand's view above in the article and expand it to today's context. There is a role for government in testing, and if feasible, they should make sure those who are infected don't endanger the lives of others. If someone's known to have Ebola, for instance, they don't have the right to knowingly infect others. It would be akin to physical assault. If someone has a cold, that probably doesn't warrant the government's involvement as there isn't a sufficient danger. But ARI also holds that the government shouldn't lock down or impose blanket restrictions. They must show that someone is actually endangering others to quarantine them. That is, actually have the virus and contagious. Not quarantine an entire city because some might have a disease. That's a gross violation of rights. Thus, their mantra is test, trace, and isolate. The country they point to as the best model in this pandemic is Taiwan, which has an astoundingly low 548 total cases and just 7 deaths because of early and aggressive methods. Yet they didn't lock down their economy. It hardly skipped a beat. When confronted on this, Paul Krugman tweeted that maybe Rand was more complicated than his caricature, but it doesn't matter. It's the rights idea of Rand that's killing thousands, he says. Thus the pivot to cop out to blaming libertarianism more broadly. But this is also nonsensical. But most states have been anything but libertarian in their response. And those that had more restrictive lockdowns haven't fared any better with the virus. As we see now with the current spikes in Europe, many countries are facing similar or worse spikes. France now has the equivalent of more than 200,000 cases per day in the U.S. Is France ruled by Ayn Rand or libertarians? What about Spain, Italy, the U.K.? What Krugman does here is use this as an opportunity to lash out and smear his ideological opponents. But he does so without even a basic understanding or representation of their ideas. Or if he does understand them, he's simply dishonest. For a supposed top intellectual at a top paper, a Nobel-winning one, this is pathetic, and it should be condemned. And they're right. He's absolutely right. Paul Krugman is dishonest. He doesn't want people who think to the right to be correct, so he will always find a way to make them incorrect. And that's something you need to understand. When you see this guy on CNN, on MSNBC, on any of the talking head news shows, when you see him being interviewed or asked his opinion about anything, remember, he is a leftist. And in writing for the New York Times, he reinforces leftism to the readers. He's not being honest. He's not being truthful. He's not being fair. He is just imposing his leftist views on people because that is the way everyone should think. And that is a very progressive pattern. Remember, progressives, leftists like Paul Krugman, believe they're intellectually superior and also morally superior. They believe they're smarter than you, and because they can understand everything better than you, they care more than you can. And that is Paul Krugman in a nutshell, which is why he assigns blame to people who disagree with him. He assigns the blame for the deaths of Americans to people who disagree with him, because they're too stupid and they don't care enough. And that is progressivism. And that is why you see politicians pointing their bony fingers of righteous indignation at our president and blaming him for 225,000 deaths in America. And ignoring the fact that most of those deaths occurred in states which are not controlled by conservative politicians. They're controlled by liberal, leftist, progressive politicians. And those in those states, they're doubling and tripling down on the reverse of real quarantine. Real quarantine is quarantining the people who are sick to keep them from contacting everybody else and then letting everybody else live their lives. But that's not what's happening. And as a result, the infections are spreading and people are dying. So if you want to assign blame, assign it where it's really due. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.